Our scripture reading this morning starts out from Isaiah, the 65th chapter. For I am about to create new heavens and a new earth. The former things shall not be remembered or come to mind, but be glad and rejoice forever in what I am creating. For I am about to create Jerusalem as a joy, and its people as a delight. I will rejoice in Jerusalem and delight in my people. No more shall the sounds of weeping be heard in it, or the cry of distress. No more shall there be in it an infant that lives but a few days, or an old person who does not live out a lifetime. For one who dies at 100 years will be considered a youth, and one who falls short of 100 will be considered accursed. They shall build houses and inhabit them. They shall plant vineyards and eat their fruit. They shall not build and another inhabit. They shall not plant and another eat. For like the days of a tree shall the days of my people be, and my chosen shall long enjoy the works of their hands. They shall not labor in vain or bear children for calamity, for they shall be offspring blessed by the Lord, and their descendants as well. Before they call, I will answer. While they are yet speaking, I will hear. The wolf and the lamb shall feed together. The lion shall eat straw like the ox, but the serpent, its food shall be dust. They shall not hurt or destroy on my holy mountain, says the Lord. And then reading from the 98th Psalm. O, sing to the Lord a new song, for he has done marvelous things. His right hand and his holy arm have gotten him victory. The Lord has made known his victory. He has revealed his vindication in the sight of the nations. He has remembered his steadfast love and faithfulness to the house of Israel. All the ends of the earth have seen the victory of our God. Make a joyful noise to the Lord, all the earth. Break forth into joyous song and sing praises. Sing praises to the Lord with the lyre, and with the lyre and the sound of medley. With trumpets and the sound of the horn, make a joyful noise before the King, the Lord. Let the sea roar and all that fills it, the world and those who live in it. Let the floods clap their hands. Let the hills sing together for joy at the presence of the Lord. For he is coming to judge the earth. He will judge the world with righteousness and the people with equity. This is the word of the Lord for the people of God.
Thanks be to God. Well, friends, this morning we're concluding our worship series after the disaster. We've spent the last 6 weeks exploring grief and exploring turmoil and exploring how God's people are called to respond to some of the worst moments of our lives. And in exploring that grief, we've been following God's people through the Old Testament who, in Israel, lived through the destruction of Israel at the hands of Babylon, or the Chaldeans, depending on which prophet you like. It's the same thing, different word. The people of Israel had had their homes completely destroyed. Every stone was overturned. Every field was burned. Every home was uprooted. And those who survived went one of two places. They either existed as refugees in Egypt, or they were taken as captives back to Babylon. The people of Israel lost everything. The pain that they experienced was extraordinary. And Isaiah rounds out the 65th chapter with this extraordinary promise. Now, last week, the prophet Habakkuk reminded us that in the end, God is the victor. That in the end, at the end of the worst moments in our lives, God is always the victor. God's love always wins. And Isaiah kind of backs that up a little bit and gives us a little bit more context. Isaiah says this. He says this from God. I am about to create new heavens and a new earth. I am about to create Jerusalem as a joy, a people that is a delight. He says, I will rejoice in Jerusalem. No longer will the sound of weeping be heard in it. I think about that line a little bit. I mean, I can imagine that for the people of Jerusalem, the last sounds they heard before they went either to Egypt or Babylon were the sounds of weeping as their homes were destroyed. No longer will the sound of weeping be in Jerusalem, Isaiah says. No more shall there be an infant that lives for a few days or an old person who dies without living their life. 100 years, Isaiah says, will be considered young. You're going to build houses. You're going to plant vineyards, and they're going to be for you again. Before you call, I'll answer. When you're still speaking, I'll hear. The wolf and the lamb will feed together. Nothing will hurt or destroy. Isaiah's promise is incredible to the people of God. Imagine a time still challenging. If you remember back to one of the first couple of sermons during this series, we said that Jeremiah told the people of Israel that it wasn't their generation, but their children and grandchildren who were going to see the promised land. It wasn't their generation that were going to experience this victory, but nevertheless, Isaiah is reminding them of what that victory is going to be. Now, when I read this, I see three promises distinctly in this passage. The first is that life is going to be normal again. When people experience tragedy, there's an overwhelmingly consistent response that they want life to go back to the way it was, to go back to normal. And the first week, I shared with you my story of being a teenager and experiencing foreclosure and living in the basement of a friend's house for a couple of months. And how, you know, for me, that was really on the top of my mind. I just wanted things to be normal again. I just wanted to do my homework in my own bedroom, not in a basement room. As much as I appreciated the hospitality and the generosity, it's not normal, and it's not life the way it was. When people experience tragedy, they want things to be mundane again if they were mundane before. To be able to just do their laundry the way they used to watch TV or go to work the way they used to. Isaiah tells the people of Jerusalem that things are going to be normal again. You're going to build a house for yourself, plant a garden for yourself, just like you did before. It's going to be mundane and boring and typical and wonderful. It's going to be normal again. Now, the second part actually comes at the end, but I'm listing it second, I guess for dramatic effect. But Isaiah tells us that the enemies will be reconciled. The wolf and the lamb will lie down. And the Bible is full of metaphors that are easily understandable by the people of the time. And of course, if you were living in the first century, if you were living in 6th century BCE, as these people were, then you knew lambs and sheep and wolves pretty well, right? You knew that they were mutually incompatible, that they were boxes that didn't fit on the same shelf, that if a wolf was present, the sheep couldn't be, and vice versa. The wolf existed to hunt and kill the sheep existed to flee the wolf. Mutually incompatible, and Isaiah says they're going to lie down together. What was once irreconcilable will one day be together. I imagine that passage was also challenging. I can't imagine being an Israelite living in Babylon, hearing these words, and not expecting God to say that I'm going to destroy the wolf, I'm going to destroy Babylon, I'm going to destroy your enemies, and everything will be gone, and you'll be the ruler of the world again. I imagine that that's what they wanted to hear, but what they actually heard was a little more challenging. One day, Babylon and Israel, the wolf and the lamb, the lion and the lamb, they're going to get along together, they're going to be reconciled, and they're going to live in peace with one another. Enemies and dichotomies are as old as time and as painful as they've ever been. Now, during confirmation last year, one of our exercises was to list things that were irreconcilable, because we were talking about reconciliation and sin. So we were listing things that we thought couldn't be reconciled. And so we came up with some silly examples like the dark side and light side of the Force from Star Wars and Mario and Bowser from the Mario video games. But there were also some deeply painful and very true dichotomies in there as well, like the Middle East, which for my entire life has been in turmoil, and in fact for most of the lives of the folks in here has been in turmoil for their entire lives, or North and South Korea, or partisanship, the seeming inability that we have to get along with those who vote differently than us. What about feuds in churches or denominations or families? The way in which we decide that we fit in a particular box and that people who are in a different box can't be on the same shelf as us, that we can't exist alongside those who are different than us. And the list goes on and on. I bet if we went around the room, we could spend all day listing all of the ways our world has divided itself into groups of people who we believe can't be reconciled. But let's look at what Isaiah has to say here. The wolf and the sheep lying down together. This is important because the wolf didn't become a sheep. The sheep didn't become a wolf. They didn't reach a compromise. They didn't agree to meet in the middle and both become a Great Pyrenees. That's about the closest thing I can think of to a sheep-wolf combo. Alice and Bill Evans have one, and if you ever ride by, it kind of looks like a sheep-wolf combo. but they remain two distinct, opposing, differing aspects of God's creation, agreeing to exist alongside one another and to seek only what's best for one another and not to harm one another. I think it's a beautiful, wonderful, and incredible thing when we can find ways to meet in the middle, when we can find ways to take on each other's traits and to learn from each other and to be a little bit more like each other. But there are even times in our lives where that doesn't happen. And that doesn't mean, Isaiah's promises here tells us, that doesn't mean that reconciliation can't happen. Sometimes we can make a monumental difference by just committing to existing alongside those with whom we differ, to loving those with whom the world is telling us to hate, and to cherish those with whom we might not agree or see eye to eye, and we don't have to, because they're also created by God and loved by God. Because indeed, that's God's plan for the people of Israel and for us today, that the wolf and the lamb would lie down together, the snake would feed only on dust, and in the end, there would be no more enemies. Now, the third part is God's promise to make all things new, a new heaven and a new earth, a new Jerusalem, everything restored, and not just the way it was, but new and even better. God's promise to the people of Israel is that every toppled stone, every burned vine, every drop of blood spilled, every home uprooted, every life dismantled would be restored better than before. Isaiah's promises to God's people are extraordinary. Isaiah's idea, God's idea of the future of the people was a return to things the way they were, a return to normalcy, a restoration and reconciliation of everything that was once separated and that all things would be made new. The Bible is a lens that helps us to understand just a little bit of who God is, and it's full of promises like this. Promises that one day, God has the final word. One day, grace is the victor over hate and evil and sin. What points in our lives do we yearn to return to normal? What irreconcilable enemies exist in our world that with God's help can be reconciled? What parts of our lives need given up to God so that they can be made new? Ash Wednesday begins on Wednesday, and that begins the season of Lent, a season where Christians have traditionally sacrificed or given up things, or at least thought about the parts of their life that need given up to God, so that what remains becomes closer to the image of God. What parts of our lives need given up to God so that they can be made new? Now, this past week was a unique week. It was one of the most spirit-filling and wonderful weeks and worst weeks all at the same time. It began on a very rare Sunday when everything went right. I didn't mention Maundy Thursday instead of Ash Wednesday, for example. And we had the awesome opportunity to meet some new faces in worship. And my soul was warmed when a couple of men came for the very first time and then spent some time afterwards raking leaves and cleaning up. Our world is full of problem identifiers. Our world is full of people who can point to a problem and say, that's a problem and somebody needs to fix it. What our world is so short on is somebody who says, I noticed something, and I'm going to fix it if that's okay. What an extraordinary witness, as tiny as that is, to just go out and rake some leaves and clean some trash up that they noticed in the back. And that might sound crazy that that was so uplifting for me, but it was. Because it was God's people doing God's work, and it was encouraging. Afterwards, we had our second multi-church youth event, which was so cool, because we really have no idea what we're doing. We really don't. If we look like we do, I'm sorry, but we have no idea what we're doing. But we're doing it because God is asking us to do it, and so we're going to do it. And so we have no idea who's going to show up, and we've been emailing back and forth about how many kids are going to be there, and I say, I don't know, between like 5 and 600, you know, and I have no idea. And we get there, and we count off, and it becomes a problem we haven't had before. It is so difficult to figure out how many kids are there so we can buy the tickets, because we had almost 50 kids. Total almost 60 participants, including the adults. And that was so encouraging and uplifting that a couple of churches can come together and say, hey, I think we should do something for the kids in our community. And the result is 50 kids coming together from 9 churches in our community. There's 20 churches in St. Clair. Literally half of them were hanging out with me and a couple of other leaders, Pastor Laura included, and Joyce, who herself went down on the tubes a couple of times. It was so cool and uplifting. And then Tuesday came. On Tuesday, a Jewish cemetery in University City experienced a devastating, calculated attack where more than 140 graves were desecrated overnight. And we awoke to the news of this despicable attack. And friends, there's no kind of hate that's better, but certainly I can't imagine hate that's much worse than the hate that would attack a cemetery. What on earth could they have possibly done to you? But whatever the people they are, whatever idea you have in your head about how certain groups of people or certain people are bad, I can't imagine that the dead laying in their final resting place are such an enemy that their graves have to be desecrated. And then I was reading the news, and I went on the New York Times, and they interviewed an 87-year-old St. Louisan by the name of Herschel Price. And his quote was one line. And his quote was, "I hope it's not a resurgence of something, of anti-Semitism, but I don't know." Now, Herschel is 87. Now, if we do a little bit of math, I've got a math teacher in my congregation, so I really hope I don't get it wrong, but that means he was born in 1930, right? If he was born in 1930, that means that Herschel was a teenager for the rise of Adolf Hitler and the worst anti-Semitic attacks that the world had seen, perhaps since Babylon. He watched this unfold live. I read about it in school. He watched it unfold on the news as a Jew living in St. Louis. And it was his quote that really dug into my heart. He said, "I hope this isn't a resurgence of something." Friends, that carries a lot of weight, given what Herschel must have experienced in his life. So I resolved that I needed to be there, and I had to see it for myself and be what little part of the reconciliation I could be. So that meant some text messages and emails, and kind of on the very last minute, I got a response from Pastor Laura that she was going to come with me from Roger. He said, "I'm coming," and it was encouraging. And so we had lunch, and we left, and three people went from St. Clair to be a part of the good in whatever way we could. And when we got there, it was so much more than three people. Hundreds of people had descended upon this cemetery on almost no notice to be the good. And what we did was kind of silly, right? We raked leaves and we washed headstones. It was nothing profound or extraordinary. But it was soul-filling. It was encouraging because we were together, people of various faiths and no faiths, people of various politics, people of various ideas, various creeds and ages, were together because someone in our community was harmed, and that's not okay. Afterwards, there was an interfaith vigil, which was encouraging because a progressive mayor spoke following a conservative governor, and they both had the same message, a message of peace. Following that, worship was led by Jewish rabbis, Christian pastors, and Muslim imams, where the imam of the St. Louis Islamic Society announced that they had raised almost $100,000, a total that is now well exceeded, for the restoration of the cemetery. They have so much money left over from what they raised that in addition to restoring the cemetery, they're also going to be restoring some of the Jewish community centers in the country that have also been damaged in these sorts of attacks. Now, friends, there is so much more work to do that raking leaves for a couple of hours can accomplish, but it was encouraging for the same reason Isaiah 65 was encouraging. I can't help but draw some parallels here. Toppled tombstones and a representative of the same sort of hate that grew in Babylon. Hate of a people because of who they were and a decision that they cannot be allowed to exist alongside us. But this story is already written and the ending is already there. God is going to bring back the sense of normalcy, restore and reconcile the sin that says that we can't exist with those who are different, and make all things new again. A couple of weeks ago, we met up with a couple of rabbis at Temple Israel in St. Louis for dinner with friends. And I've got a surprise, so don't tell anybody, but during dinner with friends, we have a rabbi coming to share with us a Passover Seder to show us kind of the inverse. So our Lent traditions are very closely tied to Passover, and so we're going to kind of see where those come from, right from the source, and that's very exciting. And I remember driving home from that experience and thinking, you know, as divided as our world is, how encouraging is it that Christians and Jews can get together to do something good? And of course, just a few weeks later, I saw that same rabbi, and sort of while Pastor Laura and I were raking leaves, he came over, and we got to hug him and say hi, and it was incredible. Rabbi Michael told us that it was his best, worst day. His best, worst day. Because of the encouragement of seeing so many people from so many different places together to do good. Now, friends, we've still got a lot of work to do. And my prayer for us this week is that each week will give us an opportunity to reconcile, to be the good and to be the change. That each week will open the door for us to be God's people in the world who lead by the example of our abundant grace for one another, just as God's grace is for us. That each day we have opportunities to choose love over hate, tolerance and injustice, and grace over fear. Now, let me qualify that real quick. It's really easy to be tolerant if you're never around anybody who's different. It's really easy to have grace if you're never around anybody you don't get along with. It's really easy to reject fear if you stay inside your house all day. My prayer for us is that we find ourselves in situations that require our love and our grace. Share it as God shares with us. It's so good, friends. And we have so much work to do to share that message of God's goodness and God's love with the world. So let's get to work. Amen.